This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, listeners, to Postcards on the Line. I'm your host, Christopher D. Littlefield. With me this week is Suzanne Williamson, one of the hosts of To the Journey, Trek FM's dedicated Voyager podcast. Suzanne, thank you for coming on Postcards today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's really great to meet you and chat with you for the first time.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Have you been on Postcards before?
I have not. They don't let me off of To the Journey very often.
Yeah, and you've got Liam Smart with you now on the show.
Yes.
How's that going?
Oh, it's fun. So much fun. He's hilarious.
He's so great. Yeah, he's a good friend of mine. I'm so glad that he's doing two regular podcasts now on the network.
He's a busy man.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Postcards.
Thank you.
Just so our listeners can get to know you a little better, even though I'm sure that there are a lot of listeners who also listen to The Journey, what is your first Trek memory?
My first Trek memory would be with my dad watching The Squire of Gothos.
Ooh, so, good one.
Original series. That's the first time I remember seeing Trek, was watching that with him. He was indoctrinating me into Trek.
Oh, that's so great. And then that's with Trelane, of course.
Yes.
Who in the novels is considered a Q, right?
Yes, which makes perfect sense to me. He should be a Q.
Like a baby Q, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Q Jr.
Right. And of course, you didn't watch that when it originally aired. That was when it was in reruns.
Definitely in reruns. I'm not that old.
Yeah.
Close, you have a 2-year-old. Not quite.
Yeah,
I do have a 2-year-old.
Yeah. Well, today we're discussing the fan response to The Impossible Box. If you would like to participate and share your response, please post your comments on the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L into the search field and it will come right up. We'll create a special Postcards discussion thread right before each new Star Trek episode. Leave your comments and they just might get read on the air. As of this recording, we have 319 comments on the Postcards thread, which is a 2% decrease from our last episode. Listeners, keep the comments coming because we love your feedback. Keep in mind that comments may be edited for time. Before we get started, I'd like to read a little bit of listener feedback. Michael Braun says, "Thank you so much for reading and talking about my comments. That was fun. Also, it feels like really interacting, both with you and Star Trek. I will continue following this podcast just like the others now." And Ria Papa Giorgio writes, "I know, I love that they do these Postcards podcasts. I think it really helps the community get to know each other and feel engaged and heard." Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining the conversation and for leaving comments for us to read. It does feel like we're all interacting with Star Trek, and thanks for following the show. And Rhea is a buddy of mine, and I love that we do these Postcards podcasts too. It's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy the conversation. Suzanne, let's get to those listener comments.
Okay, I would like to apologize in the beginning because I am going to butcher everyone's name. I can barely say my own name.
That's okay.
I apologize.
I'll help out when I can.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Suman Dewayne said, "Greetings, my fellow round ears. Due to some hearing loss, I use closed captioning. Elnor has some great lines in this episode. I should outbutt? Was I inbutting? The obvious tension between you two makes me uneasy." List that as his favorite. "Please, my friend, choose to live. It's the second time you said that, but it's still great. Because I have no time for drama in my life, I really appreciate candor. I agree. Elnor has some wonderful, wonderful lines. He keeps it light. So, which, with some of these episodes being as dark as they are, we need that. Just a little brevity.
I think so, too. I really enjoyed Elnor this episode a lot. I've really been looking forward to Elnor perhaps the most out of all of the characters that they announced. And I thought he really shined a lot in this episode.
Oh, definitely.
Daniel Huckfield says, loved this one. Great pace, real mission feel to the episode, but maintains its modern TV sensibility. It may have taken 6 episodes for a real feel of development in the story, but this episode brought everything forward and sets up the last 4 episodes brilliantly. My favorite episode so far, by far. Daniel, me too. It's my favorite episode so far.
It was definitely... Kept me in the moment. I was on the edge of my seat with this one, as opposed to the others. I felt the tension being on the Borg cube. My heart was racing. It was great. Yeah,
it was really great.
At RobVog18 on Twitter says, what can I say? Possibly my favorite episode so far. Love the Picard-Hugh reunion. And like I said before, is there a link to the Borg Queen? Oh my gosh, please, I hope so. Please, please give me the Queen.
I'd love to see what's going on with the Queen right now.
Oh, yeah.
We got the little flashback from First Contact, right?
Yes, we did.
This episode. I wonder if it's possible that we might see Alice Krieg. Is that how you say her last name? Krieg?
Krieg.
I've never known. Krieger.
It's Krieger.
Thank you.
Yes.
I wonder if we might see her. Or Susanna, the other one that played her in Voyager.
Susanna Thompson.
Right. Yeah.
I would love to see Alice Krieger. She
I would
is
too.
Amazing.
So she also plays the witch in the Gretel and Hansel horror
yes!
film that's out right now. And
yes!
I really want to see it, really just because of her.
That is on my list of films to see. And I have a list of horror films to see right now.
Yeah. I've only recently gotten more into horror films the last 3 years or so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I was younger, I was too sensitive for it. And now I kind of really like them. If they're not excessively gory.
Okay, that's another thing my father indoctrinated me to at an early age, is horror films.
I think it was the new Halloween that got me more into it.
Oh, yeah, that was good. I can't
wait
for the next
sequel. I know. And then the next one.
Yeah.
Did you see Silent Hill? Was it Silent Hill that Alice Krieger was also in a long time ago? It was based on the
video
game?
Yes, she was in that. She was
right.
in that.
I remember her from that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stefan Ringline says, yes, 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 this episode is so good on so many levels. The dialogue is excellent, for instance, between Narek and his sister agent, or between Raffi and her Starfleet captain friend. The idea of letting Picard look at a picture of Locutus and match hollow picture and face, brilliant. When Picard and Hugh fell in each other's arms, I almost cried. Yes, Stefan, the Locutus bit there with the imaging was so awesome. And the Picard-Hugh hug, yeah. These were great moments.
Yeah, definitely the Locutus moment got to me. I was like, whoa, they were actually going there with this. Ah!
Yeah, and then when he put his hand up on his face,
yes.
Ah, so good. And I know that it's been pointed out a ton, but that hug was actually not scripted, and it was Jonathan Del Arco's idea to hug Patrick Stewart, because he had mentioned what would he want to do if he had seen his father who passed away many years ago. He would want to hug him, and Patrick was like, yeah, let's go for it. And it was beautiful. It was a beautiful moment.
And honestly, who doesn't want to hug Patrick Stewart?
I want to hug Jonathan Del Arco too.
I'll take them both, a big bear hug with both.
Yeah,
of them.
Yeah.
Patrick Carlin says, the image of Romulans right before Picard sees Hugh on the screen is the Continuing Committee, as seen in the Deep Space Nine episode. Oh, Lord.
Is it Inter Arma Enim Silent Legis or something like that? It's Latin.
It's probably. It's Latin. And another Voyager Easter egg, the spatial trajector taken from the Sicarians, a.k.a. the creepy pleasure guy. Patrick, thank you for bringing up the Sicarians, because my mind, as soon as I heard that, went right back to the To the Journey episode that Liam and I just did, to the Journey 271, where we were talking about Janeway's command decisions. And I'm thinking the Sicarians got assimilated because Janeway aligned herself with the Borg instead of Species 8472. Thereby, the Borg continued on assimilating planets. So Voyager's going one way, the Borg are going the other way, assimilating all the planets that Janeway had just passed.
From season one, like all the
exactly.
Oh my God.
Which makes me think that also the Ocampan homeworld has been assimilated. Thereby making the entire point of blowing up the caretaker moot, because she killed him anyway.
Oh my God. I really wanted to know what you thought about this Voyager Easter egg in there, but that kind of blew my mind a little bit. That's terrible.
It is. She aligned herself with the Borg and killed everybody.
You know, my roommate is not a big Trekker, but he's seen a lot of Discovery and a few episodes of other series here and there. But he always teases me because I love Janeway so much. Mm-hmm. I've only recently, in the past year, kind of come out and said that she's my captain. And he always teases me. And he will tell me, you know, she made such terrible command decisions on Voyager. She couldn't get her crew home faster. She like ran the ship. Like, he just makes fun of her to tease me as being mm-hmm. not a great captain. And this just kind of actually reinforces that. If she, oh no.
Well, she's my favorite captain, but she did make some bad decisions. But
she
I
made
still
some
love
bad
her.
Decisions. Oh, I love her. Yeah. I would love her. She's the one I would want to serve under.
Oh yeah.
I'd do anything for her. Dennis Bellinger says, "We are the Borg. You will be pleasured. Resistance is futile." And Lee Hutchison says, "Really enjoyed this episode, and it feels like after a bumpy 2 weeks, things are coming together, and I'm excited for the final stretch of the season now." Yeah, Lee, definitely bumpy for me too. Michael Merrick says, "Note that Soji is programmed to be a fan of Flotter from Voyager, and she has what appears to be a Mugato stuffed animal." Suzanne, did you notice that? The Flotter thing?
I did notice the Flotter thing. And
what
I cringed. I was like, no, not Flotter. Please let him die. Leave me alone.
That's not your favorite Voyager episode?
No. Surprisingly, I know.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was really funny because several weeks ago, when I don't remember if it was what they were talking about, but there was a listener that mentioned Flotter. Oh, please let us get a Flotter episode. And now we have seen Flotter on screen.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
They're from the future. They know what's going to happen. Robert J. Geiger says, "The Soji plot has been dragging the last couple episodes, but the writers really brought it home with this episode. Narek finally pushing her over the edge was good stuff, and I'm so glad she and Picard have finally connected so that we can get the gang all together." It was nice to have that Narek thing kind of put in the past, because that was getting creepy for me.
That has not been working for me.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that Soji and Picard finally connected too. I was like, let's go. Let's get on with it. It's time. Karen Hasha says, "I can't even with this episode. Where do I start? Raffi falling off the wagon breaks my heart. I don't know what to think with Agnes. Is she really just looking for comfort, or is she trying to get Rios on her side so he'll help her kill Soji? What a wonderfully puzzling character. Elnor is a delight, and I hope he makes it back to the ship. The whole Picard on the Borg cube stuff is amazing. It is really confusing and creepy and quite scary. I like that Hugh takes the opportunity to get Picard to campaign to free the XBs. Really, it's the least he can do. Speaking of the Borg cube, I am so glad the Narek-Soji love story is over for now." Yeah, Karen. "I have to admit, I didn't believe that he'd get anywhere with her."
Yeah.
There's this whole Narek hot or not thing going back and forth all over the place. And like, I don't know. I think he's attractive. I'm not like crazy into him, but you know, he's sexy. He has a sexiness.
He is. And he was even sexier when he was on Penny Dreadful as Dr. Frankenstein.
I've got to watch that.
Oh, yes, you do.
Yeah. My boyfriend thinks he's hot. So I think he's all right. Yeah. I think he's not bad.
he's nice to look at.
Yeah. But I don't know, like, yeah, I'm still not seeing the I didn't quite feel the chemistry too much, but I think that maybe that's also kind of purposeful because Narek isn't really fully, he didn't have all of his cards on the table with her, and he started having feelings.
Yeah. He was being a true Romulan, not showing his full hand.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he's Tal Shiar?
No, I don't.
Would you say that even if you knew that he was Tal Shiar?
I probably would. Patty Bagadion says, Raffi broke my heart too. Anything involving moms and their kids, especially sons, makes me cry no matter what it is. Hopefully her son will give her a chance eventually, but I can see his side of it too. Overall, I give this 9 Rubik's Cubes from hell. People keep calling this thing a Rubik's Cube. When I saw it, my mind immediately went to the Hellraiser Cube.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm thinking, where's Pinhead? Where are the Cenobites? They're coming because he keeps messing with this cube.
Okay, interesting that you say that. And thanks for your comment, Patty. I like that it's a Rubik's Cube from hell. Okay, the Hellraiser thing. Which is the Hellraiser movie that happens in space?
I can't remember which number that is.
I don't remember which one it is, but I saw it in high school, and it's one of the first gory-ish horror movies that I saw when I was younger, just circling back to what we were talking about before. And I saw that, and it was so gross. And like, I mean, I was in high school, but it's still, like, I still didn't like it. Like, I was just still too sensitive to get into it. But you're right, that box looks so much like the little Pandora box thing. Mm-hmm. Is that what it... Yeah.
It was just, they called it the puzzle box.
Ah, okay. Yeah. And it trapped people inside or something, right?
It released hell on people.
Okay.
So the box summoned the Cenobites and Pinhead, and they would come and rip your body and soul apart.
Oh, God. Okay. I probably won't rewatch it.
I'm sure they'll be remaking it.
Probably. Karen Shupla says, I really felt badly for Soji as she was discovering everything she knew was only 3 years old. I could feel that scared feeling in my chest you get when you realize something is very wrong. Kudos to Issa for that. And another stellar scene is Picard becoming disoriented on the cube. As the daughter of a dementia victim, I feel like this was not at all Borg-related. It was Borg-triggered, and Hugh's voice snapped him out. I suppose it would work both ways, but that was a hard scene to watch, and very truthful, I thought. Well, thanks for sharing that, Karen. That's a really interesting take on what Picard was going through. And I like that you related to it in a little bit of a different way.
Yeah, that definitely makes me see it in a different point of view. I was just thinking he was reacting from the Borg and just being on the cube.
Right.
But if the Borg triggered something else, that opens up a whole new path that they could go down. Something is wrong with Picard.
Oh, yeah.
Paloma Bennett says, the scenes between Hugh and Picard were so powerful. Picard dealing with his PTSD from being assimilated was really intense in a great way. Also, Oz Trekkie says, at least someone from Picard's past is happy to see him. Oh my gosh, that is so true.
This is the first one.
It is.
Except from the sister on Vashti. This is the only person that's been happy to see Picard.
Was she really happy, or was she just like, oh, this guy again?
I don't know. She's got to deal in absolute candor. So
yeah, it's true.
I don't know. And then there was this lovely Darmok thread that popped up. Lori Damon Bowes says, Hugh and Picard on the artifact, my eyes wet. And then Dennis Bellinger says, Picard and Soji, through the trajector, their sails unfurled. And Duncan Barrett says, Picard and Soji at Nepenthe. I had to include that.
That was awesome great. When I read that. I was like, yes, yes.
Hugh and Picard on the artifact, my eyes wet. Wouldn't that be cool if we saw that character or that species?
Oh, that would be neat.
It's such a pivotal episode for TNG, or such an important one.
Gary Lesser said, upon rewatch, I noticed an announcement as Picard entered Soji's room. It was stating certain sections of the cube were off limits due to increased chronometric activity. I'll be very interested to see if that foreshadows something. I didn't catch that. Thank you, Gary. I really did not catch that.
I didn't catch it either, but maybe that's a hint for something.
Yeah.
Maybe the queen's coming out from somewhere. Yeah.
The queen! The queen is here!
The queen! Kevin Rhodes says, the not-so-good doctor is using the captain. Rios is being played. I mean, you don't kill someone and then go do someone unless you've either got an ulterior motive and or are majorly effed up, in my opinion. She needs to make him not look too closely at how Maddox died. Her only redemption could be if it's the oh made me do it thing. She comes off kind of freaky in the book, too, as in calling you five times a day after one date freaky. Oh, man. I mean, I'm so on the fence with Jurati at the moment because I like her. I want to keep liking her. Mm-hmm. I need to know more information. I thought that, you know, going and doing someone was like weird to me. There'll be more comments about that later, but I don't know. It was weird.
Definitely weird. I think maybe she was trying to place herself in a different emotional box. Like keep everything.
Oh.
In different compartments. So compartmentalizing.
Impossible box.
Exactly. Dun, dun, dun.
It's all about boxes and compartmentalizing. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I don't want to not like her. I don't want her to be bad.
No, because Allison Pill's amazing. I love
her. She's so good. Yeah.
Christopher Mock says, I'm wondering if the Borg are aware their technology is being kitted out for profit. I know they sever their link, but the technology itself is designed to assimilate anything it comes into contact with. I have to believe if life on the artifact took a sudden turn for the worse, someone would make the tiniest mistake and touch something that would nanoprobe them. The Borg would be none too pleased to learn their stuff was being carved up and sold off. The Romulan refugees might find themselves with a much larger problem down the road if the Borg ever figured out what was going on. Wow, that's deep. I did not think about that. Christopher.
I didn't either. But yeah, but this is something we would have thought about during the run of TNG and Voyager if we were on a Borg cube anyway, or in first contact, say. So we're taking it, we're really trusting the fact that this cube is completely severed from the collective, as they've told us to believe. Mm-hmm. But what if, ...
Yeah, especially since there are so many things about the cube that they don't know.
Right.
Like the little room that hid the queen's thing.
Do you remember, in the scene when the walls were kind of shifting and moving and all that kind of stuff?
Yes.
That effect was so badass.
It was so creepy. I loved it.
It reminded me of how it's described in one of the novel series that I can't remember, where Janeway's on the cube and, what's the name of the book? I can't remember. Somebody knows.
Is it the
one
where she gets assimilated?
Yes. She gets sucked into the walls. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the book. That series. Yeah. It reminded me of how they described the mechanics and the walls and everything moving around.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
And I wish I could remember the name of it. And I can't.
Yeah. I'll get it before this episode's over. Joshua DeVries says, first episode without a flashback since the pilot. The writing here was outstanding. The Narek Soji plot really worked well, and even though Narek has shown his true colors to Soji, it's obvious that he did develop feelings for her. I wonder if we'll see him turn against Narissa to save Soji at a later time. Layers within layers. I can't wait for the next episode.
So Narek's like an onion. He has layers.
Narek is like an onion, and we have to keep peeling them back. I did think the Narek Soji plot worked much better this time.
It did. But mainly it was just the plot to pull them apart. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I am too.
Lori Damon Boise says, well, finding out Romulans have secret names immediately reminded me of the T.S. Eliot poem, The Naming of Cats. For the rest of the episode, the Romulans seemed to me to be cats, hunters, stalkers, toying with their prey. Then the no round ears rule that emphasized their own pointed and cat-like ears seal it.
Okay, I didn't put those two together, but a couple people commented about that. Suman Dewan also said, Romulans have three names, like cats. The naming of cats is a difficult matter. It isn't just one of your holiday games. You may think at first, I'm mad as a hatter, when I tell you a cat must have three different names. So interesting.
It is. Now I want to break out into Macavity, though.
Do you really?
I will not do that.
Please don't.
I do.
not because I don't want to hear you sing, but cats. I mean, Tough, yeah. Tough. That's tough. So this is that. That was the Taylor Swift role in the film, right? That sang that song.
Yeah.
Oof.
They ruined Cats for me. They ruined it.
I would rather see a musical about the naming of Romulans, to be honest.
That would be a good musical.
Yeah.
I will be there opening night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks, y'all, for pointing that out.
Jim Stoffel says, what about this theory? The Maddox that died in sickbay is not real, but an android as well. This is why she had sex with Rios. She wanted to feel an actual human being, not an android.
Okay.
Jim.
What do you think about that?
Jim, where are you coming up with this? That is so cool. I love it. I would like to think that Maddox is an android.
I kind of like to think that too. That would be okay then, right? If she killed, I mean, but if he's sentient, like, I don't know.
It would make her a little less evil. So I can deal with that.
Yeah, we'll see. By the way, I believe that the novel that we're talking, is it Before Dishonor? I could be wrong. I don't know. Someone's gonna correct me, and I look forward to that. Zachary Jackson, who is a first-time commenter, thank you for joining the conversation, Zachary. Do you want to sing first-time commenter, Suzanne? Or
Thank you. I think you should.
Okay, so Zachary's a first-time commenter. Zachary says, the puzzle box used by Narek to release the radiated particles was reminiscent of Talora's Thaleron radiation device at the beginning of Nemesis. Yes, Zachary, it was. Very Romulan flavored. I enjoyed it. I do hope to see Elnor and Narek have an absolute candor / absolute deception debate in the next episode. Perhaps one that will lead Narek to further reconsider his choices. I like that idea, Zachary. They do have kind of diametrically opposed modus operandi, you know?
Definitely. That would be an interesting conversation for them to have, but I really mainly see Elnor just speaking with his sword.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting that he's just ready to kill someone, but I don't know. It's weird. He's an interesting character, Elnor.
Definitely. Mark Keller said, I like how when Raffi was drunk, nobody started preaching to her. That would have been cliche. Instead, we see compassion on the characters' faces, especially when Rios tucks her in. Michelle Hurd did an excellent job acting. I'm sure Raffi will resolve her problems by the end of the show. Joshua DeVries also said, I love how well they're treating addiction in this show. They're not dehumanizing Raffi or turning her into a stereotype. You generally feel for her and want her to get better. I totally agree. And Michelle Hurd is killing it.
Oh, yeah.
Just killing it with this character. I loved her to begin with, but she is just amazing.
Yeah, we've talked about this a little bit in previous Postcards episode about how, you know, they're bringing the concept of addiction and people who are dealing with their demons and who have this type of illness, and how we're really looking at it in this Trek series. And it's, you know, it's really speaking to me a lot too. And, it's really interesting that she's there boozing it up after she's upset about her son and her family, mm-hmm. and the reason why she went out there apart from helping Picard, and just falls off the wagon, starts drinking and smoking the snake leaf again right there on the bridge while she's still working to help everybody. It's really interesting. And it was interesting to see Picard just kind of sit there and just they're letting her sort of spiral a little bit, you know?
Yeah. But the way she was able to flip that switch when she was speaking to the captain on the comm, you would never know that she had been drinking or doing drugs or anything.
Right.
Oh, and that's just so true in how some people are able to live their lives while still dealing with their addiction and being drunk or high and still functioning, but people don't know unless you're around them all the time.
Right. And it also I think it says something that she is just being that way in front of these people.
Mm-hmm.
She's not hiding it. And that, for some people with addictions, they do that. Some people don't. You know, addiction, alcoholism and addiction exists on a spectrum. So the way that an illness like that manifests in one person is going to be completely different from how it manifests in another person. And I just like that they're showing something really real, you know? And and she's not okay. She's in the middle of it. And Mark, I know you say you think Raffi will resolve these problems by the end of the show. I don't know. I don't know if she will by the end of the season. I don't know. It's a really fascinating journey. I'm really glad that we have her. I really like her a lot, and I like what she's going through. Jason Meyer says, "I really liked this episode. Somehow it made the entire Narek Soji plotline work for me, and it only increased my caring about the young android." Yeah, I started caring more about Soji this episode too, mm-hmm. Jason. "This is not a criticism, but an observation. Raffi burning down the friendship with her connection at Starfleet to get Picard onto the Borg cube was a sacrifice, one of many she has been making for years. When she signed off and Picard and others applauded, it felt pretty insensitive. Sure, she got JL what he wanted, but where was the sympathy for what that success had personally cost her?" Yeah, Jason, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
"I can't help but imagine we have another scene in our future where Raffi rips Jean-Luc a new one for using and abusing her without truly caring about her. I love seeing these flaws in my Star Trek characters and find it a welcome change that I can disrespect something Picard has done. I'm all for this new evolution of the Trek universe and its formerly, quote, perfect characters." Jason, that's a beautiful comment. I think that what you're talking about is a subject of contempt for many people, Trek fans, for many traditional Trek fans. And me personally, I had a hard time getting used to it at the beginning of the series as well. But seeing your spin on it makes me appreciate it a little bit more. And I do acknowledge that we are watching Trek evolve before our very eyes, and we're in the middle of a Trek evolution, which I like. And I think that to your point, seeing these characters take responsibility for their flaws is something that's important on screen, and I think also important for us to do individually in this world right now.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah,
you,
I don't know.
I like there. That. I had nothing to add.
I don't know. Yeah, thanks for that comment, Jason. I love these comments that make me really question, you know, my issues with the series or the writing, mm-hmm. or whatever. And then, yeah, I love that these comments are becoming increasingly introspective in these threads. Yes. You know, it's really great. It's so nice to do this.
Brian Diggs said, "Humans think there is no way for the synths to be sentient, but people also used to say the same thing about people of African descent." That is very, very true.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how society evolves and we see so many people as other or as less than,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, years and years and years down the road, we realize the mistakes that we were making. Sometimes.
Exactly. We're all the same.
We're all the same and we're all different. Yeah.
Just love each other.
Nadim Bayati says, "Great episode, wonderful ending. Now it's a race to find the homeworld." And Brian Diggs says, "A very slow race." Yes, it is a very slow race. They are pacing themselves. And Brian, with that comment, we are going to move on to our listeners' questions and concerns.
Mark Keller stated, "This was my least favorite episode. Not much was revealed. Plus, I'm sick of Narek and his Romulan Rubik's Cube. I did like the dream stuff, however. I enjoyed the first 5 episodes, so for me, Picard has been a success. I'm hoping next week Elnor decapitates Narek and escapes from the artifact." Me too, Mark. Me too. "I hope they have more about the shared Romulan mythology. The woman with the tarot cards interested me. Maybe we'll find out more about this destroyer next week." I was wondering about the destroyer too, Mark. I want to know more and more and more about that. Why did they all freak out? I need to know.
Yeah, I do too. I want to know more about the ex-Borg Romulan cat lady, as somebody referred to her a few episodes ago. That kind of sort of looks like Savick. Robin Curtis is Savick.
Does.
Janessa Quijada, not really digging this episode. The whole Rios Jurati thing at the beginning had me screaming, why? Why the F would you do this? And broke my attention for the rest of the episode. Yeah, Janessa, it threw me off too.
Yeah, it was kind of creepy and out of nowhere, but yeah.
Yeah.
Not liking that.
But you know, okay, so like, she was the one who came to him, right? Like, Jurati came to Rios.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I think it's interesting that she was just like, I need to go and do this and to make myself feel better and to feel comforted and whatever. And I don't know, I thought Rios was really nice in this episode.
Yeah.
I liked him a lot.
I didn't like him acting on that impulse, even though, because she came out and said, this is me making a bad decision.
That's true. Yeah. It was a really weird... I think it was meant to be kind of weird and gray area-ish and like, mm-hmm. are people taking advantage of each other in their weak moments or like, is there a genuine connection? Because I think earlier they did have kind of a nearly flirty interaction or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see how that plays out.
Tony Salazar said, I was disappointed with John Luke with regards to the way he treated Raffi in this episode. She's obviously hurting and not in a good place, but he just used her to get his credentials and seemed either unconcerned or oblivious to her welfare. I was surprised it was Rios who went to check on her. Their scene together was fantastic, but I expect more from Picard. In the past, he's never shied away from asking members of his crew to do hard things, but in this instance, his heart seemed to be lacking. I agree, Tony. And I really had an issue when he stood up and clapped for her.
I didn't like that either.
No, that was like, dude, what are you doing? Have you no shame, really?
That's like reinforcing her demons, right?
Mm-hmm.
I hope that she confronts him on these things too, somehow.
Yeah.
Suman Dewan again says, was anyone else angry at the crew for allowing Raffi to drink her worries away? I was a little sick that no one did anything, especially Picard. He seemed disappointed that she had the bottle and was smoking, but said nothing as long as he got her to do what he needed. Feels a little bit like Raffi is being used. And Alexander Boom says, what really threw me off was the music during that sequence. It was almost comical. I don't understand why it was presented to the audience as almost this, quote, fun, quirky moment. That's just jarring. Yeah, so for the writers and the creatives part on really showing a character with an addiction problem in a very real and I think often accurate way, there are these little moments to where it feels unsympathetic to what she's going through and to her mm-hmm. illness. And yeah, I'm really torn about that too.
Yeah, the only one that showed any kind of sympathy was Rios.
Was Rios, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I was like, hey, don't take her bottle.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good that he did. I think, they obviously really care about each other.
Yeah.
I don't think this is the first time that this isn't obviously not the first time that he's seen her in a situation like this.
Oh, no.
Sometimes friend takes the bottle.
She's going to come looking for that bottle and it's not going to be pretty. James Heath said, I question why the Borg would assimilate technology that could transport drones 40,000 light years, a cool Voyager callback, but only have it for the Queen in an emergency. But it helps the story, I guess. I don't think the Queen would let the drones know about it because then there might be some defectors going off. So she kept it to herself.
I really like that they incorporated that technology into the Borg cubes mm-hmm. and that there's a queen cell. That's just really cool in deepening Borg lore and technology.
Oh, definitely, because if things are going bad on the cube, the queen has an escape and she can always make more drones.
Right. Yeah. Brian Milosh says, I enjoyed the Soji Narek storyline this time, except for one thing. Narek was a Bond villain. Spit, throw, get acid on Soji, and kill her like her sister was killed? Nah, what I really need to do is put in the room a Rubik's Cube that slowly releases red mist, so that Soji has enough time to pound through a floor and get to safety. You know, because she's a synth and can do that sort of thing. Yeah, the red mist will work. I had a Scotty Evil, aka Dr. Evil's son, moment watching that. Just shoot her.
Shoot her!
Brian, that's a really funny comment. And I like that you're going to the J.J. Abrams red matter trope that is in so many J.J. Abrams movies, including Star Trek 09. I really like when Brian Milosh has criticisms and concerns about things. Brian, because you're such a diehard fan, like most of us, and you're just it's just really funny when you get critical of Trek things. Thanks for that.
It is weird that Narek did it that way. It's
it's just weird. Yeah. Just shoot her.
Just kill her.
throw her out the air. Well, I guess she could survive out the airlock, but
yeah, probably.
There are other ways to dispose of her that are not so like mystical and toy boxy and, you know.
Yeah, just get it done.
Or actual Thaleron.
Disruptor to the head. Bam.
Right. Easy. Crusher. I don't know.
Brandon Shamatala said, Narek is a scumbag and a terrible character, which is going to make it so much worse when the inevitable character flip happens and he comes to Soji's rescue because he loves her so much. Gross. I so hope I'm wrong about the flip. I don't see him flipping, but that's just me.
I do.
You do?
But I don't think he's a terrible character. I like the character now. I think he has behaved as a scumbag, but I'm kind of more invested in him now. And like, again, like I said, like a little more attracted to him now. So I do think a little flip action is going to happen, but she can't take him back.
Oh, heck no.
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 Rhea Papa Giorgio says, and I love this comment, Rhea, I didn't like the hookup. Yeah, there have been a couple of moments where Agnes has flirted with Rios. Yeah, as I pointed out before. Mm-hmm. But this went from 0 to 100 at the drop of a hat. What I really didn't like was that Agnes was clearly compromised. She had already expressed reservations about doing this, and Rios slept with her anyway.
Yeah.
Given that he is such a kind man, as evidenced later in the episode, it didn't seem to fit his character. Additionally, it reinforces that trope that men are DTF... anytime. And listeners, if you don't know what DTF stands for, I'm not going to say it on here, but it means down to something.
Beep.
It reinforces the trope that men are DTF anytime, anywhere, for any reason. It was just too 21st century trashy for me. Hmm. Yeah, I'm really on the fence with this because there was a moment when I feel like as an audience member, we were like, this is going to happen. Oh, no, it's not going to happen. Oh, wait, this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, they're not going to do it. Oh, wait, okay, they're going to do it. Like, they were really screwing with us.
They did it. He even asked her, is this going to make you feel better? Or help for a right. little bit. Why do it then? Why, Rios? Why?
Yeah.
You're yeah. better than that.
I don't know. Well, listeners, that about sums up your questions and concerns about the Impossible Box. In the postcards thread this week, there were some really thoughtful and introspective comments for a couple listeners. So in lieu of your last words, I'd like to call this final segment Deeper Thoughts this week.
By Jack Handy.
Yeah. By Jack Handy. That's an old SNL reference for those of you who yes. don't get it. Yeah.
90s forever.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Chris Chaplin said, the impossible box is how we cope with our traumas. From Picard and the XBs to Raffi and Girardi, these characters are facing these traumatic losses, which have taken a piece of their selves from them. Picard's trepidation on the Borg cube, the dizzying flashes to first contact, showed us how haunted he still is from his violation by the Borg. But with the help of Hugh, he learns to put a new name on the Borg, victims. He copes through understanding and empathy. He doesn't hide away, but embraces his fears. Raffi and Girardi take an opposite approach, distracting or numbing themselves from their respective traumas. Raffi drinks and smokes, isolated in her room, and Girardi sleeps with Rios, thinking it'll make her forget for a few hours. While I don't like how Rios took advantage of Jurati's state of mind, I do appreciate the show presents these different responses to trauma. Hugh, the model for us all, uses his traumatic experience to help others, including Picard, heal. What a beautiful continuation for the character, and a tie-in to Star Trek's inherent optimism. That is seriously deep, Chris. Thank you.
Wow, Chris. Yeah, I love this comment. The impossible box is how we cope with our traumas. Ah!
Yeah, that is fabulous.
This is great.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't really have a lot to add to that, except that...
No.
Yeah. The only thing I like is I really like that you said that Hugh is the model for us all. There's this... That's an interesting thing to think about. And that he uses his traumatic experience to help others heal. I love that. And I think that that goes back again to taking responsibility for ourselves, and that our traumas and the things that we deal with, our personal demons, once we face them and work with them and take responsibility for them, which of course is a journey and not a destination, we can help others who are dealing with same things or similar things. And I also like, Chris, that you said that's a beautiful continuation for Hugh and a tie-in to Star Trek's inherent optimism, which again takes me back to a common criticism of Picard and New Trek is that, oh, it's not Gene Roddenberry's vision. It's not the optimistic utopian Star Trek. But you know what, Chris and Suzanne, I don't know what you think about this, but this is kind of reminding me that that inherent optimism and living in that optimistic place and having an optimistic outlook isn't an automatic thing. It takes work to get there. You know,
it takes work. Lots of work.
Yeah, it takes work to get to a society to where we're all loving and accepting each other and allowing people to live and to let live and to be who they are. It's not just given to us. We have to work to get there. Ah,
so let's put in that hard work. Come on,
yeah, let's do it. Rebecca Skipper, for our final comment on the episode, says, Star Trek Picard presents an interesting contrast worth discussing. We are presented with the ex-Borg and androids who are not given a choice and are being exploited. To me, these are the powerless. Rios, Raffi, Picard, and Jurati have the power to make their own choices. The ability to make bad choices and go through the process of healing and growing is better than not having a choice at all. Yes, I realize that outside forces shape the choices we make, but it is clear to me that even having the right to make a bad decision isn't something every being has access to in the 24th century. There is something profoundly disturbing about this, and I know this theme exists in other Trek series. I think this series is asking us what it means to be human. Star Trek Picard is providing social commentary in its serialized form, and I'm finally starting to make the connection. This episode felt like familiar Trek in so many ways. Rebecca, another great comment. The you know, dealing with the choices, the privilege of having a choice to make a bad decision. You know, the people who are powerless to even have a choice to make a bad choice, you know?
Yeah. I have nothing to add to that. That is just
yeah. I feel like anything I say is just going to take away from what you guys said already. So I'm just going to shut up and stop talking about it. And then like read it again later and just kind of meditate on it. And I got to say, listeners and commenters, this has been my very favorite Postcards on the Line thread to read and to curate so far. It may have a little something to do with the fact that this was also my favorite episode of Picard, but I loved the conversations in this thread. And again, there was more disagreements and stuff and a lot of agreeing to disagree, but everyone listened to each other. I just thought everyone really personalized this episode and their comments on the episodes. So thank you so much. I hope that you enjoy this Postcards episode as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. Suzanne, what did you think about everybody's response to The Impossible Box?
Reading through all the different threads just opened my mind to different ideas. Just having all these people comment and bring something else to the table that I didn't even think of, or I didn't even notice, or what I missed that in the episode, and I had to go back and look it over. I just love reading all these different threads. So please keep them coming.
Oh, yeah. This is really great. Be sure to check out all of our Star Trek Picard coverage in the main feed for The Line and in the Trek FM master feed. You can catch full analysis on The Line main show with Chrissy, Justin, and Brandon. Our episode commentary show is Tracks on the Line with Mike and Max.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Star Trek Picard, and the best place to do that is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where we will collect your feedback for postcards. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM, or send us an email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose send to a show and select The Line.
Suzanne, it was so great having you on today. This was a lot of fun. It flew by.
It did. I was so happy to be here. Thank you, thank you, thank you for asking me.
Oh, thank you for being here. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Well, you can find me popping up occasionally at the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8. Or listen into To the Journey, where I'm joined by Zachary Fruling and Liam Smart, and we delve into Voyager.
Nice. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CD Littlefield, and of course, lurking in the Babel Conference. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. Thanks to our associate producer, Norman C. Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and The Line. Join us very soon for another episode of Postcards on the Line, right after the next episode of Star Trek Picard, Nepenthe, drops. Hailing frequencies open.
I did make something this morning. Well, finished something. And it was in response to you asking me to be on the show. It's my stained glass Picard comm badge.
Oh, my God. When did you make that?
I started it last week and I finished it this morning.
Oh, my God. That is so cool. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Whoa. Do you do that?
Yeah.
Often?
I do stained glass.
So do you have to make the metal form the thing and then pour the glass in it and cook it or something?
No, I actually have like sheets of glass and I cut them and then sand them down and solder it together.
Holy sh! That is so cool. Oh my God.